number of years ago now, I was sitting at a grocery store, and I was waiting for Katie, who was inside, getting some things for the family, and it was pretty much an abandoned parking lot. It was rainy, it was cold, hardly anybody was out, nobody wanted to be out. And I was sitting there, this man came out, it was drizzling, and he's bringing this cart with some items in it. He quickly gets to his car, and he opens the door, and he throws the things inside, and he turns and he's looking. And I'm just sitting waiting for what he's going to do here. He's looking for that cart return. But there's not one anywhere close. And so I assume it's raining, it's cold, he's just going to push the thing off, hop in his car, and drive off. But what was actually interesting is I continued watching. As he's looking, he spotted an abandoned cart not too far from him. He walked over to that cart, put his inside of that cart, and walked about 100 yards to the closest cart return and put it back. And you really see something about somebody when you see them do that. When it's cold and it's drizzly, nobody's watching. It's just some little thing. It's not anything major. It's not anything big. No one's going to stop him on the street tomorrow and tell him he did a good job putting that cart back and the cart return. And yet, the kind of guy this guy was led him to make that decision. I thought that was pretty interesting. It said a lot to me about his character. I have no idea who this man is. Never met him. I didn't get out of the car to go say hi or anything. It was raining and cold. But I learned something about him as I watched the things that happened in that parking lot where he probably thought no one was paying attention to anything he was doing. It reminded me of Romans 12, where it says, have regard for good things in the sight of all men. When we see that sort of behavior, that sort of action, we can recognize that is a good thing. That is someone that's displaying some character. And ultimately, what we're going to talk about tonight is the idea of integrity. This man, to some degree and in some level, has some integrity. He could have easily just cast that thing off, hopped in his car, and drove away, but he realized he understood the right thing to do was to take care of the thing that he had, to put back what he had taken. And so to some degree, in some level, some sense of morality, he had in his heart an understanding what needed to happen. And there's a number of verses we could look at, talk about this idea of integrity, and we'll read a few tonight. I want to start in a really interesting place about this idea in Luke chapter 20. At the end of Luke chapter 20, as Jesus is dealing with some of the rulers, he's criticized them numerous times at this point, and there's just some epic mic drops, we might say, that Jesus gives to the people about these rulers, and this is one of them. At the end of Luke 20, it says, and in the hearing of all the people, he said to his disciples, just stop and think about this for a minute, in the hearing of all the people. Now, not too long before this, it said there were so many thousands of people following him, they were trampling one another. There are a lot of people following Jesus. And in the hearing of all of the people, he says to them, beware of the scribes who like to walk around in long robes and love greetings in the marketplaces and the best seats in the synagogues and the places of honor at feasts, who devour widows' houses and for a pretense make long prayers. They will receive the greater condemnation. I can't imagine sitting here listening to Jesus and seeing the faces of these leaders, any of them who had been present, or when word got back to them that Jesus had made this statement about them, because they're so worried about perception. I mean, that's their big thing. They want people to see them as holy and righteous. They're so concerned about this, and Jesus is just delivering this epic chiding of these people because of their hypocrisy. And we'll come back to that idea a little bit later. But what he's really hitting at is the fact that these people don't have integrity. They like to look the part. They like to look religious, and they like to say the long prayers, and they like for everyone to see how righteous they appear, at least. But really, when it comes down to it, they're corrupt. And of course, Matthew 23, he deals with that in great detail. But I want to talk for just a minute about what integrity actually is, because it's kind of an interesting term. There's a number of different terms that we might translate to something similar to integrity. It's actually not, the word itself isn't found a whole lot, at least in my version, the ESV. Now, one of the places it's found is in Titus 2:7, talking about integrity of teaching or soundness of teaching. And that's kind of a good place to start to understand the term. Some of the Old Testament usages that we may look at here a little bit in Proverbs especially have very similar type dynamic to the term itself. In that one usage in Titus, and really this the root term that's used a number of different places, it's translated incorruptible or imperishable. It's actually kind of the negation of the root term. It's kind of interesting. So the root term that is used actually means to destroy or to ruin or even to kill in some situations. And so you just slap a alpha in the front of that and it kind of negates the idea. And so now it's something that is incorruptible, something that does not destroy. You kind of see how that's working and when they use that term. Now it's the opposite of that, which you've seen this even in our language. We'll throw like an unruin, right? I don't think that's even a word, but just use it as an example, right? We throw something on the front of it that changes the meaning. Actually, it's the opposite of the meaning. And so in a sense, that's what's happening. And integrity, if you're just to look it up in a dictionary, it's going to be something like the quality of being honest. It's the idea of sincerity or genuineness. You're going to find some of those terms there and maybe some of the synonyms or even part of the definition, depending on what dictionary you look at. And the root concept of the word, math people will like this, is it really comes from the word integer, which if you are a math person, you know that's a whole number. Right? There's no fractions. It's about wholeness. It's about being intact. And so we really hope that a bridge has integrity when we go over it. Right? We don't want to go over a bridge that we're not sure about the integrity of that bridge. We're not sure about its wholeness or that it's actually intact. We'd be very concerned if something had compromised the integrity of that bridge, maybe a huge storm like a hurricane. Some of that has happened in the past, and so we're very careful. They'll put engineers out there and make sure all is well before we get out on that bridge because we don't want it to corrupt. We don't want it to be destroyed while we're sitting on top of it. That would be a very bad thing. And so maybe that helps us understand the idea of what integrity actually is. It's the idea of being whole or being sound is really the idea in Titus 2:7 about sound teaching. That's the concept of integrity there. It can take various dynamics, but you can see that structural construction type of idea. But of course, from a believer standpoint, from a spiritual standpoint, it really contains the idea of morality, right? Of moral uprightness, of straightforwardness before God and before others. And I like what Chuck Colson said about this. He said, we must be the same person in private and in public. Only the Christian worldview gives us the basis for this kind of integrity. If you know who Chuck Colson is, you know he took quite the transition in his life, being a Nixon aide who was convicted of various crimes and who was converted in the process and kind of turned his life a different direction. And so what he's recognizing is that the Christian message, that the gospel message itself, is really the only worldview that portrays this reality that we need to be the same. We need to be the same in public and as we are in private. We need to be the same person. And to not be that is kind of like these rulers in Luke 20. It's just hypocrisy. It's the show of religion, but privately we are corrupt. We're the whitewashed tombs that he talks about in Matthew 23. You look good on the outside, but inside you're dead men's bones. You are empty. You clean the outside of the cup, but the inside of the cup is filthy. Now, it's interesting if we keep reading in this story, the very next account is Luke 21, a story you're very familiar with, but I think it follows nicely with what we just read. Jesus looked up and he saw the rich putting their gifts into the offering box. And he saw a poor widow put in two small copper coins. And he said, truly, I tell you, this poor widow has put in more than all of them. For they all contributed out of their abundance, but she, out of her poverty, put in all she had to live on. And really the connection there, again, is that God is just not impressed with the external. He's not impressed with the things on the outside. He's not impressed with the perception. He's impressed with reality, with what is real and what is substantive, what is whole, what is stable, what we are inside, honesty and sincerity and genuineness. That's what truly impresses Jesus here in this story. Not the rulers who make a big scene of things, but this poor widow who gives out of her lacking. No one knows that. Jesus knows because he's Jesus. So he knows these kind of things. But no one else understands the fullness of the situation. But that impresses Jesus. Someone coming and looking religious and looking holy and giving a great gift and all that, that doesn't impress God at all. What impresses him is the heart. And so the opposite of integrity, I'd say, at least to some extent, sometimes it's hard to nail these types of things down, but to the opposite of integrity, what we see in this story is hypocrisy. And ultimately ruin, the ruin that comes from that. When you live this kind of double life, when you aren't genuine, when you aren't sincere, it's the ruin that comes from that. Being a different person in a different place, that's what we see about these rulers. In one context, they're praying the long prayers and they're wearing the long robes and they're saying the religious sayings and the memory verses and all that. But in another moment, they're taking advantage of poor widows. And that reveals who they really are. The outward facade is just fake. It doesn't demonstrate reality. It's what they want people to see. It's what they want people to perceive. But what Jesus is hitting them on is what they're really like. The sorts of things they're actually doing. That they need to be the same person in public as they are in private. The Pharisees showed their lack of integrity by neglecting the weightier matters. You know, the weightier matters are things that other people don't necessarily recognize right away. You know, again, they can tie the dill and the mint and the cumin because everyone sees that, right? I mean, that's showy. They want everybody to notice that. I mean, they want people to see all the things they're doing, all those good works. But it's the concepts that are a little harder. Faithfulness, love, mercy, being gracious. I mean, those are the kind of things that people don't walk up and say, hey, you know, you were merciful today. I appreciate that. We don't recognize those things really on the surface very well. And so to the showy scribe and Pharisee, they're not so interested in that. They want to do things like wear the long robes and get the attention as being religious and being holy. And of course, that's what Jesus is hitting them on. That while they put off this appearance, the reality is within, they are corrupt. They don't have integrity. Right? They're headed to ruin, not the unruin that we talked about before, not the incorruptibility. They don't have what is whole. They don't have what is intact. They have that which is going to decay, which is another way in which that term is used. And so when we talk about integrity, we need to understand that the concept of wholeness, of being intact, of revealing the things that reveal what we really are. And so I want to go back and talk about some of this and how we understand integrity in our life. And maybe the way that integrity is demonstrated. The first of those is that integrity is tested by how I handle the small things, how I handle the little things. Those who are faithful in small things will be faithful in the big things, we're told in Luke 16. Just a few pages back, likely in your Bible, Jesus makes this statement. We don't have time to get into the parable of the dishonest manager. It's pretty hard. I'll let Jeff do that some other time. A little complicated. But we'll talk about some of the points here in Luke 16 and verse 10. One who is faithful in a very little is also faithful in much, and one who is dishonest in a very little is also dishonest in much. If then you have not been faithful in the unrighteous wealth, which is just worldly things, not necessarily things that are bad or evil in and of themselves, but not the spiritual things. Who will entrust you the true riches, more of the eternal things? And if you have not been faithful in that which is another's, who will give you that which is your own? And if you can't handle other people's stuff, right, that's coming after the dishonest manager who kind of squandered his master's wealth and then he found a way to repair that. That's kind of one of the aspects of that story. But if you can't even do that, how are you going to be given your own things? And then it comes down to this end, no servant can serve two masters. Sometimes it's the little things that reveal who our real master is. Just those little choices.
here in the tent.
Right? I mean, sometimes what we would consider the big things, they're pretty obvious. You know, you show up to services on Sunday. Maybe you come to Bible class on Wednesday night. Maybe you go to the high school devotion if you're a high school student. You do kind of the things that people notice, right? Because those things are obvious. They're clear. And to some degree, we are going to make judgments based on the things that we see. I mean, that's a reality, and we ought to consider that. But maybe what's maybe more telling in our life, and the thing about integrity that's hard, is it really comes down to that I need to measure this for myself. Hopefully, if I have good friends close to me, they're willing to help me with this. But in matters of integrity, it's not so much what other people think. It's about what is reality. And me trying to figure that out. And sometimes I have to really question about those little choices. Like what I do with the grocery cart when it's raining and cold. Just a small little thing. Here's an interesting one. What about the way I not only just treat a waiter or a waitress, but the way I tip them? Do you know that a lot of times waiters and waitresses do not like Sundays? Because Christians are cheap. You go read about it. You go look it up. That's what they say. They don't like working on Sunday afternoons a lot of times because the Christians come and they're cheap. That's how they tip. I'll tell you, I read that a while ago, and I came to this conclusion. I was cheap. You know, and I make all these judgments. You know, they took a little bit too long to bring my water or whatever it is, and so I start docking the points, you know, and I get down, okay, maybe I'll give them 15%. And maybe it's just getting a little bit older. I don't know. But that really started to bother me a little bit more. I just give a lot more now in my tips than I used to, and I'm a lot more gracious, I hope. I think I am. I'm trying to be. With maybe what's going on in their day and the things they're struggling with, it's probably not about me. You know, they may have two sick kids at home and they're going through a difficult stage in their marriage or whatever else could be happening that has really nothing to do with me, and they're doing their best to do this job to make ends meet, and I'm sitting there docking points because they said something that I didn't like or they didn't bring my water in 30 seconds or whatever other rules we've come up with to decide. Integrity. What are we showing to this person and to others around us about the kind of person, the quality of person that we are? Sometimes now I give a bigger tip even when they do a terrible job, just for the purpose of maybe that makes a difference in their day. I don't know. Maybe it makes no difference. I have no idea. And it's just this small little thing. And so what I'm trying to say is just trying to identify those small things. It was something I found in my own life as we ate out and we did things that just wasn't good. I didn't think it was right. I read that article. Articles do help, see? And I read that and I realized, okay, something's off. I'm not demonstrating the right sorts of things towards other people. And that's just one small example. But the little things can matter. I remember my Uncle Bob telling me some stories. He used to do maintenance on apartments a few years ago, and he kind of does those kind of jobs. He's retired, and he worked on apartments for a long time, and he's mowing lawns for the city. Every job he has, they want him. They want him to be doing this. They're calling on him more and more, and ultimately, he ends up just saying, I can't do that, and that leads to him getting a different job. But here's why. He's a person of integrity. They can trust him. And when he worked that apartment complex job, almost the exact words he told me is the reason they liked him is because they knew he could go into a unit and if he saw 30 cents, he wouldn't take it. That's pretty small. I mean, just think about that, just a quarter and a nickel sitting there. But they knew they could trust him that he wasn't going to be going in there and swiping people's change. They probably never even would notice. But it's the small little things sometimes that tell us where we are in terms of our integrity, that tell us where we are as a person, our character, our standing before God, that even those little things that we're concerned about, that we're worried about. I had another friend who worked in IT, and he was very concerned. He came and talked to me, this is when I lived in Tennessee, about some issues with documentation. And he was really wrestling with this because Some of the things he was having to write had to do with dating, the way he was dating something, and it was a different date than when something was actually happening, and he really wanted to be upright and straightforward. And to take a very long story and make it very short, basically he found out that it was legal to do what the boss was asking to do after he did some research, and so he was fine. But he was concerned about just that little thing, about dating something after the date that it actually was, because that wasn't right in his mind. Right? He wanted to make sure he was doing the right thing. Again, that says a lot to me about a person when they're just concerned about even just those little things. And just to be honest with you, that's a hard thing for me in my life. Katie's the rule follower. She's going to kind of keep me in line. I see things differently sometimes, and she's got to help me see, nope, that's the rule. That's what we got to do. And maybe some of you are like me. Maybe it's just those little things we have to think about that we really have to hone in on and that say more about us than maybe we think. And so integrity is tested really by how we handle those little things. If we're faithful in the things that are little, we'll be faithful in the things that are big. That's what Jesus says. And if we're not faithful in those little things, we're not going to be faithful in the big things either. It just says a lot about who we are. Secondly, integrity is tested by how I handle trial. How I handle the things that life throws at me. We just finished up a class on Job. Some of you were in there with me. And we really talked about this concept. That Job has all of these things thrown at him in life. And part of the whole lesson of the book is to see how Job reacts to this. The challenge that Satan brings before God is, of course, he's going to bless you and praise you and sacrifice you because you've put a hedge around him. You've blessed him. You've given him everything that he could ever want. But if you take all that away, he will curse you. And one of the terms that we find continually in the book of Job is this idea of maintaining his integrity, his wholeness, his stability. Even when things get tough, even when things are difficult and hard, he still maintains his faith before God. Integrity, David Jeremiah said, is keeping a commitment even after circumstances have changed. Proverbs talk a little bit about that. We make some kind of agreement, things change, it becomes hard, we have to stick with it. It's not always easy to do, but we make a promise or we make a vow that we need to keep that promise, we need to keep that vow. That's what a Christian is going to do, someone who has integrity, someone who is stable in the things that they do in life. And Proverbs has quite a bit to say about this. I just want to read a couple verses to you out of the book of Proverbs. Proverbs chapter 10 and Proverbs chapter 11. We're just going to pick up on one verse in chapter 10 and one verse in chapter 11. And chapter 10 and verse 9, it says, whoever walks, this is the way of life, living with integrity. Whoever walks in integrity walks securely. Right? It's like that bridge you go over and it's safe because it has integrity. It's whole. Whoever walks in integrity walks securely, but he who makes his way crooked will be found out. I know these are our general truths, general wisdoms, but I'll tell you what, those who are not walking in integrity, they shake with fear with a verse like this. Because what it says is when we don't walk this way, it will be found out. It will be revealed. And maybe the reason for that is what we find in chapter 11 and verse 3. The integrity of the upright guides them. It directs them. The stability they have, the wholeness they have. But the crookedness of the treacherous destroys them. It's that opposite, right? When you have integrity, it maintains you. It keeps you stable. But when you are crooked, it leads to the opposite, to ruin. And thus, exposure. The things that decay, the things that ruin become clear, they become obvious. And the way that our integrity is tested sometimes is how we handle the difficulties of life. And of course, Job comes through this. He's got his doubts and he has some things he brings out about God that were not fully correct, and God corrects him on that. But it's amazing the level of faith that he has and maintains in God, even through the worst of circumstances. He understands this idea that the Lord gives and the Lord takes away. that there's going to be blessings in life, there's going to be good things in life, and there's going to be times in life that are hard. And we have to accept them both. That's what temporary life is like. Sometimes it's good, and sometimes things don't go well. And that's why we yearn for the eternal. That eternal weight of glory that Paul talks about in 2 Corinthians 4 and 5, that he is longing for. It's not about the things that we have here, but it's about what is to come. And so the way we see and the way we test, the way we measure our integrity is sometimes in the manner in which we handle the things that are thrown at us in life, the things that we don't expect, or the things that are extremely hard. How do we deal with those? How do we handle that? Life's not always going to be easy. It's not always going to be a breeze. I think this is a point that's really hard, at least for some of our young people to get. Some of them have already experienced a lot of hardship. But and I will say this on the one side of it, and I've tried to convey this more than one time in the past. To enjoy the blessings of life that you have now. And I think it's either the song we sang this morning, the closing song, or another one that Matt wrote that talks about storing those things up for the difficult times to come. That's a really important idea. To remember the blessings, to remember the good times, to store those up for when the storms come. So you can remember the blessings that God has bestowed upon you. They're going to come in some form and in some way. It's not going to be like Job. Very few people, if any, are ever going to experience the fullness of what Job experienced. But that's the model, that's the idea, that we're prepared beforehand so when those struggles come, we still won't remain strong. And of course, Jesus gives some ideas about that, building the house on the rock, right? The Sermon on the Mount. So when the floods come and the storms come, that house that's built on the rock, it remains firm, whole. It has integrity, right? It withstands. The house built on the sand, it is destroyed, it is brought to ruin. So this idea of integrity really is found many places in Scripture, even if the word itself is not present there. And the way we see this in our own life is how we handle those little things and how we handle the difficulties that come our way. But I'll say this as well, and we find this in Scripture in a number of places, integrity is measured by what is done in secret. And maybe not exactly in the way that we'd initially think of that when you hear that phrase. There's really a couple different ways you can take this. Integrity, it is measured as seen by what we do in and what we keep secret. Matthew chapter 6, Jesus has some things to say about this. He tells us about some things we should keep secret, or at least at times keep secret. He talks about those, again, those rulers who want to blow the trumpet before them as they give, right, for the perception, so that everybody can see them bring their great and large gifts to the temple coffers. They want to see them how holy and how dedicated and how devoted they are. They want to make sure that nobody misses that. And Jesus says, actually, that's something that would be good to keep in secret. That's okay. Sometimes our integrity, it's measured by what we do in secret, what we keep in secret. And so sometimes that's generosity. And a point that I think is really important, especially for our younger people and people early in life, your 20s, your 30s, is to realize that not all things that are done before everyone. One of the complaints I've heard at various times in various places is, well, we just don't do anything to help people. I would tell you there's a lot of things that are done to help people that you probably never know about. I don't think this text means that we can't ever do things with people knowing. I don't think that's Jesus' point. He's countering the behavior of some of these rulers and what they do. And so I think he's getting at is, you can do these things secretly. What really matters is the heart behind it. Not that it's being noticed, not that everyone sees, but that you're doing the right thing. That's what truly matters. And so you don't have to blow the trumpet and go out or pray the long prayers out in the streets so everybody sees you. You go into the secret place to the one who is in secret, and he'll reward you openly. It doesn't matter if anybody knows. You don't have to go around with your disfigured face and making sure everybody knows that you're fasting and that life has been so hard the past couple days because of what you're doing. And we're not talking here about special diets or anything. We're talking about religious fasting. you don't need to do that. That, you know what? It's great. You can keep that secret. You can keep that hidden. You can keep that between you and God. That's what Jesus is saying. And sometimes our integrity, maybe this is kind of one of those things, it's a little thing too, right? Are we ever tempted to want to talk about those things that we've done just so people know that we gave to help somebody or some religious or spiritual thing that we took part in and want to make sure someone knows about that? It's not always wrong for people to know those things. But what Jesus is getting at here is the heart behind it. He's speaking to issues of integrity, to wholeness, to what is intact. We understand we're letting integrity guide us, not some other master, not attention. Right? You can't serve two masters. That's what he's talking about in Luke chapter 16. And sometimes those little things, sometimes what we want people to know, that's revealing what our master is. That the master we have is perception, what people see us as, or whatever it may be, or our master is money. That's the point in Luke 16, that we're really after the wealth of the world. And so the little decisions and all the decisions that are made around us really are going toward that master. We can throw some things in that make it look like maybe we're going after the other master, but ultimately Jesus says you can't serve two masters. It's not going to work. And so integrity is ultimately measured by what is done, what is kept secret. Some of that is what I said earlier, that there's aspects of this that people just aren't going to know. They can't know. The things that I am thinking as a person, you're not going to know those unless I reveal them to you. I mean, Paul talks about that in 1 Corinthians 3, about the mind of God. We don't know the mind of God unless he reveals it. We don't know each other's minds unless we reveal that. And so some matters of integrity are really about what's done in secret, what's kept in secret, what we know about ourselves that maybe nobody else knows. Or very few people know. The story of Joseph is impressive in this regard. He's off in a foreign place, and you know the account. Potiphar's wife is trying to tempt him, and yet day after day after day, he's saying no. The only thing that we would think of likely that's keeping him from that is fear, that maybe Potiphar would kill him if he does this. And there's aspects of that that probably are true. But what he says to Potiphar's wife is, how can I do this great sin against God? And he also mentions Potiphar, that Potiphar, he's given me all of his house except you because you're his wife. How can I do this? This is integrity that's coming out of Joseph. It's just the kind of guy he is. And we see it again when he's in prison, that he ends up being the one who's kind of running the prison underneath the guard's authority. Everywhere he goes, then he's second in command to Pharaoh. It's just the kind of guy he is. And these things come out, that they're revealed. And then there's also the hidden sin that eats away, that corrupts, that compromises integrity. David has some things to say about this in the Psalms that I think are interesting for us to think about. In Psalm 32, blessed is the man against whom the Lord counts no iniquity, in whose spirit there is no deceit. For when I kept silent, my bones wasted away through my groaning all day long. For day and night your hand was heavy upon me, my strength was dried up as by the heat of summer. I acknowledged my sin to you, and I did not cover my iniquity. I said, I will confess my transgressions to the Lord, and you forgave the iniquity of my sin. When we keep it in, and we hide the things that are secret, they corrupt, they decay, they destroy, because that's the opposite of integrity. Psalm 51, a well-known psalm, likely after Nathan the prophet comes to David and he's made aware of the egregiousness of his sin with Bathsheba. He has a lot of things to say in this psalm that are very helpful and interesting, but verse 16 I think is important. For you will not delight in sacrifice, or I would give it. You will not be pleased with a burnt offering. The sacrifices of God are a broken spirit, a broken and contrite heart, O God, you will not despise. He realized he needed to come clean. He needed to acknowledge his sin. And all the other things he was doing, whether it's sacrifices or other good deeds, really don't mean anything when his heart is not right with God. His integrity was compromised because of what he was keeping within him. And that's what Nathan comes to talk to him about. Tells him the story and says, you're the man, you're the one who's done this. And now he has to realize the seriousness of where he is and how his integrity has been compromised to such a degree that he doesn't even recognize it until Nathan comes to him and reveals it to him. And of course, in terms of integrity, it would be good for us to remember that God sees everything. Nothing is hidden from his sight, Hebrews 4:12 tells us. We may hide it from everybody else around us, but it's still going to be revealed to God. That's one of the tricky things about all of this. It's not always so evident, or at least we think. And so we feel like we can keep it. You know, we can kind of keep it hidden. We can keep it secret. David commits this sin. There are a few people that knew around him. I mean, they helped him do the things that he did. But no one else was going to know. I mean, we'll just kind of keep it the way it is. No big deal. Nathan wasn't going to have any of that, and God wasn't going to have any of that. And so Nathan comes to hold him accountable, to show him how his integrity is being compromised. That's a difficult thing to do. You know, that man with the cart in the grocery store and coming out into the parking lot. One reason I love that story, because it actually hits all of this. Right? It's just a little thing. I mean, if he wouldn't have put the cart back, I probably would have thought bad of the guy for a minute or something. I don't know. But then I would have gone on in my life and wouldn't have thought another thing about it. The other side of that is I'm telling you about it now, years later, because of what he did. That's pretty big. But in the moment, it's just this little thing. At the same time, it was difficult. It's cold and it's rainy. And I mean, no one wants to go put a cart back 100 yards away when they're getting rained on and it's cold outside. Nobody's watching. I mean, at least he doesn't think. There's just hardly any cars out there. I'm sitting in a car that had tinted windows, probably doesn't even realize I'm sitting there in the car. I'm at quite a distance. Probably has no idea I'm there. I mean, from his perspective, it doesn't seem like anyone's going to notice, and yet he still did the right thing. All of it. The little things. When it's difficult. When it's secret. When it's hidden. When no one, at least to his knowledge, would see, and people do see. We deceive ourselves about that. People are seeing more than we realize. But sometimes we think people aren't seeing. What do we do in that moment? That tells us a lot about our integrity. It tells us a lot, therefore, about our standing before God. It's about soundness and wholeness, about being right in his presence. Even David struggled with it. Had to have someone remind him. I've been there before. Probably many of you have as well. Yet sometimes it takes a good friend, someone to hold you accountable, to say that's not right. You shouldn't have said that. You shouldn't have done that. We need those kind of friends in our life sometimes to help us. Sometimes it just comes down to us realizing. Being introspective, as the Bible calls us to do, and realizing we aren't intact right now. We're compromised. That the devil is in preparation mode to sift us like wheat. We better be praying. We better be asking for help. Because he's more than happy to do it. And maybe you find yourself there tonight. I don't know. We struggle. I mean, there's so many difficulties. And sometimes I think we just try to put up this front like everything's okay. I'll tell you what. I struggle. You struggle. There's things we go through that people never know about because we don't tell them. And I'll suggest this. We need to find a friend, find someone, talk to our spouse. We need to be interacting on this, getting together, and working on this idea of integrity, wholeness, completedness, stableness, so that we don't lead ourselves to ruin, to destruction. If you need help tonight, make it known. If you need Jesus Christ in your life, you haven't done that yet. If you haven't been baptized into Christ, you are unstable. You are compromised. If something were to happen right now, you would crash. I mean, there's nothing there holding you. You need the support of Jesus. You need his blood for your sins. So it's time to make that happen. If you've done that in the past and you realize things aren't right in your life, come get help.
We have elders that are glad to help you. There are others around you in this building tonight who are more than happy to sit and talk with you and to encourage you, and you encourage them. That's the sort of thing we need to be doing as a congregation. And if you need that, make it known. Why don't you come as we stand and sing together?